Today we're starting a new series, and it's called Living Under Restrictions, How to Navigate 2021. Last week, Liam kicked off an amazing talk. In fact, he's got loads and loads of feedback throughout the week saying how great it was. And he's been reminding us as well of how what a great job that he did. So thank you so much. And I think in some sense, prophetically, that has almost queued us up, really, of how we are going to kick off and start this new series. So we're looking at Living Under Restrictions, How to Navigate 2021. And if you've got a Bible, if you could look at Exodus, it's the second book in the Old Testament. In its Jewish name, it would have been the Book of Names. And we are reading from Exodus chapter 11. But I'm just going to be a little bit sneaky and read a couple of verses before from verse 8. Then a new king to whom Joseph meant nothing came to power in Egypt. Look, he said to his people, the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies. Fight against us and leave the country. So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. Listen to this, verse 14. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose name were Shipra and Puah, when you're helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see the baby's a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live. The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Then the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and asked them, why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live? The midwives answered Pharaoh, Hebrew women are a lot like Egyptian women. They're vigorous and give birth before the midwives arrive. So God was kind to the midwives, and the people increased and became even more numerous. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people, every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. There you go. I don't know what went through your mind a couple of weeks ago. It's almost 2 weeks ago now, isn't it, when we heard the Prime Minister describe that we're about to head into a third lockdown. Maybe you're homeschooling now, and certain words went through your mind like, flip. How am I going to pull this together? How am I going to work, and how am I going to homeschool? Or maybe you thought it just... how am I going to keep connected with family members? Or maybe you've been shielding and it's the prospect of shielding again. Or maybe you're working in the health service and you're just aware of rising COVID cases. Maybe your life just got a whole lot harder when you heard that news that we're heading into a third lockdown. It seems to me in conversations that I've had that people can fall into two kind of camps. Some people can very much think that lockdown and the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic, can bring absolute positives. People can think, we joke about sometimes on the team that it's like the best pandemic ever. There's some folks that talk about the positive sides, and for some people they genuinely are, but then maybe for you, you really struggle to see the positive sides. And sometimes when we talk about that in communities, it means that actually if the pandemic, if the space that it brings, if the change of pace, the change of life, If that's a positive thing for you, when you share that in the presence of people who find it difficult, there can be a temptation to cancel each other out. So how do we progress forward in 2021? How do we navigate this season and live under restrictions, live under a lockdown? How do we do that? How do we do that when for some people there are significant challenges, for some people there are less challenges? How do we do that when some people's livelihoods are threatened and some people's livelihoods aren't threatened? When it's hard, how do we do it? It strikes me that this season is really tough for a lot of people. And yet, it seems to me, the truth is that God is with us in the midst of it. It's kind of like two things that don't make sense. If we look at them in binary terms, like God is with us, I know that's the case, but yet it's also really hard. I know that's the case. And it seems to me that Christians can fall into one or two camps. We can overemphasize the positive, best pandemic ever, yay! Or it's like, it's really tough. I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for my vaccine. I'm just waiting for it all to go away. So how do we balance and navigate these two? Well, firstly, we recognize that in the midst of the difficultness, the difficulty of this situation, we recognize that God is in the midst. And it feels that somehow that the Lord's maybe wanting to speak to us because Egypt, we're looking at Egypt and Exodus. We know the people of God are now in Egypt, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But the Hebrew word for Egypt is Mitzrayim. Now, I don't know if that's the way you pronounce it. I'm just kind of doing a slightly fake Israeli accent and with the help of Wikipedia. I think that's how it's said, but it's called Mitzrayim. And the Hebrew name for Egypt is confinement or limitations. The truth is the people of God always saw Egypt as a place of limitation, a place of confinement, a place of restriction. And so where do we find ourselves today? Well, the book of Genesis, the very first book of the Bible, ends itself with Joseph, a beautiful, well-known story. And 400 years later, we find ourselves in a new season of life. The people of God have begun to settle in the northern part of Egypt in a place called the Nile Delta. And if you remember, God has promised his people, God's promise, God's covenant with Abraham would be that they would be as numerous as the stars. In Genesis 26:4, he says, I will make you as numerous as the stars. And so obviously the people of God don't have Netflix of an evening, and so they just seem to populate that it's like there is literally no tomorrow. And so what we find is that Pharaoh, a man called Joseph, who was a Hebrew, who'd worked with Pharaoh, he became his vizier, he became his prime minister, he was a man who ruled over Egypt. He's long forgotten. And yet God's people find themselves under a new Pharaoh, a new king. And this king is threatened by the people of God. He's threatened by the Hebrews. He's threatened by the Jewish people that are populating. Their fertility rates are through the roof. And so what he does is something that we see in our own cultures, but in cultures around the world. He begins to sow a narrative of despair, and he begins to sow a narrative of xenophobia and a narrative of racism. He begins to, the Hebrew people have enjoyed living in Egypt for 400 years, peacefully. They've been part of Egyptian society, although living in their own enclaves. And now Pharaoh begins to dislike them, and he begins to be fearful of them. So he begins to describe them in negative racial slurs. He begins to use, the way he describes them is that they're breeding like insects. He turns the hearts of the Egyptians against God's people. And yet, in the face of all these kind of racial slurs that are coming against the people of God, they still seem to grow and to grow and to grow and to grow, because that's what God has blessed them. God has promised that's what he'll do. The second thing is then Pharaoh, and that's where we get the Egyptian word for king, begins to try and clamp down even more on the people of God, to try and break their spirits. So he draws them further and further into slavery in two ways. The first way is he makes them do manual labor. He makes them manufacture bricks, and he makes them manufacture mortar. Slavery is the most horrendous form of abuse. It is destructive. And not only does it physically confine people, but it destroys their sense of who they are. Remember that God has said that they will be a prosperous nation. They'll be a nation, a people with a land and a place. And right now they're in this midst of oppression, and they're in the midst of slavery. And then Pharaoh, to make the situation even worse, not over it, is he punishing them physically. And it says, the Bible says that they were bitter. He made their lives bitter with harsh labor. And then any free time that they might have, he takes away that. And he makes them work in the fields. They literally have no ownership over their lives. One of the most, in some senses, wicked thing that can happen to people is this sense of psychological subjugation, the sense in which that you lose any sense of purpose, you lose any sense of power. The sense of powerlessness is one of the deepest human emotions that we can experience. And that's what happens. The people of God are in this horrendous predicament. I mean, and it feels like, when is it going to change? Is it going to change? What's going to happen? It is a terrible, terrible situation. And in fact, I spent last week thinking about this, and I read this, what you call a Bible commentary, a really in-depth Bible commentary. And actually, it was really moving to see the extent to which the Egyptians, and particularly the royal dynasty, Pharaoh, went to try and break and destroy the people of God. Now, you know, we complain about having to line up outside Tesco. I know I do. And I know this season is really hard for many people. All kinds of restrictions, all kinds of challenges, and certainly is in developing countries around the world. It is devastating. The coronavirus is ravaging the UK in different ways, and it's affecting the way we live, and it's wreaking all kinds of issues, particularly with mental health. But it, certainly in some places in the world, developing countries, it is devastating, forcing people into slavery, the kind of things that we read here. It is a terrible thing. And yet, something kicks in. You see, God has made a covenant with his people. The word covenant is something that this church has talked about for a long time. Previous leaders have captured what the reformers were passionate about, this notion of covenant, that in the Old Testament we see different ways in which God reaches out to his people, that God makes a promise with his people. You know, as human beings, we can't really fulfill our obligation of the covenant other than our obedience to God, to recognize how great and how powerful that he is, and to bring him a sense of worship, to reflect our lives back to him. He instigates this covenant. It's more than an agreement. It's a binding, everlasting connection, deeply relational agreement. In fact, it's really hard to find the words to describe it in English. That is what has happened to God's people, that he has promised that he will be with them. And right now, in this moment that we read it, it looks like it has gone. And yet we read, a couple of verses on, we read about two names. We read about two midwives, Shipra and Pua. It's really weird because various scholars say, if you read chapter 1, you'll see that there's people that we recognize. In the first couple of verses, there's Abraham, there's Jacob. We recognize those names in Jewish history. And then there's a whole shedload of, there's a whole gap because there's lots of names that we don't hear about. It represents this big time frame. That's because names in the scriptures are really important, particularly in Jewish culture. And there's no names mentioned except these two midwives. Are they only two midwives? No, there's more than that. But these are the two names that are mentioned. Why? Because the Bible tells us that they feared God. And you see, Pharaoh could not stop God's blessing of his people. The restrictions and the limitations and the horrendous things that were going on to God's people, he could not stop what God's promises, the restrictions, the slavery, couldn't stop God's promises. And so Pharaoh's the only thing that he can now do is to come up with a plan that every boy that is born be killed, a genocide of males. And in order to do that, he needs to enlist these midwives. And so the kind of heroes of the story, even before we get onto Moses and we look at the great redemptions which have shaped our theology and our understanding, we have these two midwives. You see, God always uses people who with background with questionable backgrounds. He uses people of insignificance. And these two female Hebrews represented a whole load of midwives. They were people that you wouldn't necessarily have a lot of social status, but he uses them powerfully, and this is what he does. Pharaoh draws them to himself and commands them to execute boys, and they refuse to do it because they recognize God's promise to his people. They recognize that as they look in this, the middle of this hard situation, which is terrible, they recognize that God is present, because God is present within them and are moving amongst them, because they are multiplying like there's no tomorrow. And they recognize that that is God's covenant promise, that he is with them. And as they hear Pharaoh's narrative, and as they hear Pharaoh's destruction, and they hear Pharaoh's racism, as they hear his racial slurs trying to marginalize God's people, they hear another voice. And that is the voice of God's covenant, of God's presence. And so when Pharaoh tries to make them destroy the boys, they refuse to do it. And I think there's something in that for us today, as we try and navigate 2021. At the end of Genesis, in Genesis 50:20, there's this really very, very emotional scene where Joseph, if you know the story, if you remember Jason Donovan and the coat, I'm not going to sing it, and Joseph is sold into slavery. And it says this, he's talking to his brothers who sold him into slavery. He said, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." There's a theme which links into God's unbreakable promises. That God is the God of redemption. That God can take really hard things. This is the hand for us. This is the hand. God can take hard things in life, and yet in his presence can redeem them. So midwives become the hero of the story, even before we even learn Moses' name. Women become the heroes of the story because they refuse to hear Pharaoh's lies, and they refuse to carry out the things that he asks them to do, because they are listening to a different story, and it is the one of God's promise, knowing that God will move in the midst of a terrible situation. It seems to me that what happens here is the difficult situation magnifies what the midwives are already doing. By the nature of their work, by the nature of their existence, they serve. They bring children, they help bring children into being. Jewish scholars looking at this say, it's a kind of the game before the game. It's a picture, it's a metaphor for what is going to happen when we begin to read about Moses. It's a sense in which they are calling out what it is God is wanting to do. They have faith in Jesus, whilst everyone around them has lost it because of the horrendous situations and circumstances that they are in. They are doing the thing that God has always asked them to do, to serve, to be a midwife. And this is their time to shine. Listen to this. In AD 40, there are about 1,000 Christians. So this is a man called Rodney Stark, who's a sociologist. That's like 0.00000000017%. Okay, that's not a lot. That's of the Roman Empire. By AD 30, there were over 6.3 million, about 10% of the Roman Empire. By the time we get to AD 350, it's 33 million, nearly 34 million people. That's 56% of the Roman Empire, according to Rodney Stark. And do you know how Christianity grew, went out of control, grew rapidly? It's how Christians responded to pandemics. There were two major pandemics. The first one was AD 165. It was smallpox, and it lasted for 15 years, okay? That's a long time to live through a global pandemic. And a third of the population of Rome died. And do you know what happened? Do you know why this terrible, terrible thing, this horrendous thing happened, a really hard thing, and yet God's presence was there? Because Christians chose to stay and serve. They listened to a different story. In the same way that the midwives did not listen to Pharaoh's lies and his dominant narrative about them as people, they listened to God's promises. When the pandemic kicked in AD 165, as the elected officials legged it to the countryside to get away the clean air, Christians stayed. And when you began to show symptoms, what happened is, well, people kick you out of your house. And there's a man called Bishop Dionysius, and he describes it in one of his writings of people just literally dying in the streets. And of Christians meeting with them. All some people literally needed was food and water, and they survived. And so Christianity grew because as pandemics kicked in, people chose to stay and serve. You see, plagues and hard things magnify the things that are going on in our lives. You see, for the midwives, it magnified their compassion and their heart to serve. And for the Christians in AD 165, and at other times there have been pandemics throughout history, the Christians choose to stay. And the pandemic magnifies their passion and their heart for serving. Pandemics have this magnifying effect. You see, when faced with fear, I don't know about you, but it's my human nature for fear to kick in and think, how can I respond to this? How can I respond to this situation? But it's faith response. Our faith response is this. It says, I cannot fix this situation in my own strength. I'm overwhelmed by this situation. This situation is so intense right now. But God, in his grace, can meet us in that place. Martin Luther, one of my favorite reformers, wrote this about 500 years ago or so. And he wrote also about pandemics. And he saw that a Christian's desire to stay in the hard place, which we don't deny it's a tough season, but we choose in the moment to stay and to serve. He saw it as an act of spiritual warfare. I'm timing this, and what has happened is somehow Siri has just kicked in, but it's gone, praise God. This is what Martin Luther says. He says, no, you'll not have the last word. This is him taking on the enemy of God. He says, if Christ shed his blood for me and died for me, why should I not expose myself to some small dangers for his sake and disregard this feeble plague? If you can terrorize, Christ can strengthen me. If you can kill me, Christ can give life. I love this, but he says, if you have poison in your fangs, Christ has far greater medicine. Should not my dear Christ, with his precepts, his kindness, and all his encouragement, be more important in my spirit than you roguish devil, with your false terrors in my weak flesh? God forbid. God away, devil. Here is Christ, and here am I, his servant in this work. Let Christ prevail. See, Luther, if you ever want to read about spiritual warfare, honestly, read Martin Luther. I don't know whether this makes any sense to you. This is a very weird environment to be speaking to you right now. Nobody in the building. What I want to say is this. I want to say from my heart to your hearts is, I know this is a hard situation. I know it is. I know for some of you, we'll be facing things that are really difficult right now because of Corona, because of COVID. And I don't want to deny what a difficult time this is. But I don't want to stop there. because I don't think the scriptures allow us to, and I don't think the history of the church allows us to. Life is hard sometimes. And sometimes the church, you know, when life's hard, you don't want to be in church because people sometimes just put their fingers in their ears and deny that. So life is sometimes hard. But God always promises his presence. And where God's presence is in the hard things, that's often the place, times where God brings redemption and brings change. So what do we do? I'm going to finish with this. And for the benefit of the tape, there's somebody here waving cards with number telling me how long I've got left, which is very, very grateful. If not slightly off-putting, because I know I've gone over time. Yeah, time up, I see it. C.S. Lewis, in the book The Great Divorce, when he wrote about hell, one of its key themes was this idea of social distance. The idea that we're distant from one another. We live in a time now where we are distant from, we can't get close to people. You can't hug people. You can't see people. And for C.S. Lewis, that was his idea of what hell will be like, distance. And do you know what, folks? I think this. We embrace the fact this is hard. And we embrace the fact this is hard for us. It's hard for our city. And the hard situation, the isolation people feel is a foretaste, C.S. Lewis, of what he says of the other place. It's not a good thing. But we have an opportunity to let this pandemic magnify as the horrendous situation that Egypt brought to God's people. In the hearts of those midwives, to magnify what they were doing was to serve. Like to magnify the early church in AD 165, when people ran out the city, they stayed. And the heart of Luther, that we fight against the enemy of God. Whether you think the enemy of God caused coronavirus or not, I think it's the product of living in a very broken, messed up world. But no doubt he loves to exploit it with fears in our hearts. And I think we have an opportunity to demonstrate to a people that are stuck in social isolation that we have an opportunity to serve them, to pick out the amazing thing that Liam said far more concisely than I have today, to show kindness and love to our city in this time. Yes, it's hard, but yes, that God is with us and God can move in these situations. Yes, people are living in social isolation. Yes, people are overwhelmed with life. But we can, in the small ways that we can, find ways in which we can reach out to people in this difficult time with kindness in our hearts, which reflects the kindness of our God in heaven, who loves us and sent Jesus to die for us. And with that heart, we can reach out to people. What might that look like for you in this time? I think it means that firstly, we stop cancelling out this is the best pandemic, this is the worst pandemic. Just face facts, it is what it is. It means that we ask the Spirit of God to show us ways that we can connect with people. God is longing that everybody should meet him and know him. This is a time to magnify what it is our heart to serve. It may be you walk into work tomorrow, you buy some extra coffees. It may be that I've become a school governor. I don't know whether I'll be a very good school governor, but it gives me an opportunity to email the head teacher and thank him for the amazing job he's doing. What can you do? Can you take things into the classroom if you're a teacher to help other people? What practical things can you do for your neighbours in this time? Praying that God can take something small in a really hard time, and by serving people, God can move and communicate something of his heart in this season. I once heard a story of a little old lady back in the West Midlands where I'm from. My mum told me this, so it's got to be true. I didn't read it on the internet. And it was a lady who was housebound in her 80s, a little Brummy lady. And she prayed that God would give an opportunity, housebound. And one day, the gas man came to her. She had an issue with the boiler. The gas man came, and she led this guy to Christ in her 80s. Life can be hard. God is present. And when God is present, he can redeem all circumstances. Guys, my heart to you today is in this crazy season. Let's stand firm. Let's stand firm. And let's ask the Holy Spirit to open opportunities. Amen.